Lokaha, the people. Ayam, these. Tvam, you. Abhadram, inauspicious. Asammatam, unacceptable. Translation. The king of the Yavanas replied, "After much consideration, I have arrived at a husband for you. Actually, as far as everyone is concerned, you are inauspicious and mischievous. Since no one likes you, how can anyone accept you as his wife?" You can say after me. The king of the Yavanas replied, "After much consideration, I have arrived at a husband for you. Actually, as far as everyone is concerned, you are inauspicious and mischievous. Since no one likes you, how can anyone accept you as his wife?" Srila Prabhupada's purport. After much consideration, the king of the Yavanas decided to make the best use of a bad bargain. Kalakanya was a bad bargain, and no one liked her. But everything can be used for the service of the Lord. Thus, the king of the Yavanas tried to utilize her for some purpose. The purpose has already been explained, that is, Kalakanya as Jara, the invalidity of old age, can be used to arouse a sense of fear in people so that they will prepare for the next life by engaging in Krishna consciousness. Again, the translation. The king of the Yavanas replied, "After much consideration, I have arrived at a husband for you. Actually, as far as everyone is concerned, you are inauspicious and mischievous. Since no one likes you, how can anyone accept you as his wife?" So in this allegory, Jara, the invalidity of old age, has approached the king of the Yavanas. Nobody wants her, Jara, inauspicious and mischievous, because when there's Jara, it is very, very bad. Nobody wants old age. Although the fact is everyone universally accepts just like death, there's some saying like the thing you want last is the last thing you get. That's what happens. Jara. Nobody wants her, but she comes anyway. So she is allied with the king of the Yavanas, whose personal name is Bhaya. Right? Fear. So there's Jara, and there's fear. Old age can be used. This invalidity of old age, he has a purpose. As you see, he doesn't marry her, but he accepts her as his sister later on, so they're together. And she marries somebody else. What's his name? Prajvara, the fever sent by the terminal fever. When you die, your temperature goes way up to maybe 107 degrees, and then your temperature plunges and you lose your bodily heat entirely. Devastation by... Yeah. So anyway, these are the conditions of life. So one of them is fear. Now, Prabhupada uses this example. Material life is called pavarga. Pavarga. Now, this is a kind of a Sanskrit play on words, because you start with a word, apavarga. Apavarga means liberation. Upavarga means liberation from existence in the material world. And you take away the then it can be read as the negation of pavarga. Now, this is a little tricky to explain. Let me try to explain this. The word apavarga is formed from the prefix apa, A-P-A, plus varga, which is from the verbal root ridge. And apavarga means to, like, twist away. Like, it has the sense of taking a stalk of grass, twisting it, and breaking it to twist off. Like, that's apa, that's apa ridge. So apavarga, to break off, or to extract, become extracted from material life. So when you, but pavarga, pavarga is a, it's kind of a joke, but in the Sanskrit language, the alphabet is arranged in rows, which are called vargas, and there's a row that's called pavarga. The consonants, the sparsha alphabet, the alphabet of the consonants. See, there's like kavarga, kaka, gaga, ja, chavarga, cha cha, ja ja na, da ta, and then pa. These are what we call in English labials. See, they're the sounds you make with your lips. Pa pa, pa ba, pa pa, ba ba, and ma. Right, those are the consonants that you make using your lips. Labial means lips, right? So this group of consonants, these five consonants, is called pa varga, the row beginning with pa, right? Pa 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 ba ma. So pavarga means, if apavarga is liberation, then pavarga, by this kind of play on words, becomes material life, and is broken down like this, that the five different statuses of material life represented by the letters papa, papa, ma. Everyone following this? I guess not, huh? Well, I mean, the Prabhupada has been using this example for a long time. He heard this, and I finally understood what he was saying. You know? Anyway, take it. Pavarga stands for a group of consonants in the South Sanskrit alphabet. The row beginning, if you look at the back of the book, anyone have the back of the book with them? I'll show you. You don't believe me. Where's that thing which tells you how to... Yeah, here's the Sanskrit pronunciation guide, right? And here they have these, see how they go across in rows? So this is the labials. Pa, pa, ba, ba, ma. So that's called pavarga, right? So the word for liberation is apavarga, right? Or not pavarga. So what is pavarga? The five conditions represented by pa, pa, ba, ba, and ma. So what is pa? Pa stands for parishrama. Parishrama means very hard labor. That's the first condition of material condition of life, is you work very hard. That's what people are doing, work very hard. How hard? The next, pena, the pa, p, the aspirated ph, pena. Pena means foam. You work so hard that foam comes out of your mouth. You've seen horses all lathered up? Even they've been running hard, they got lather all over their body and their mouths, there's foam coming out of their mouths. Right? So that's the condition. You have to work, not just work, but you have to work really hard if you want to get anywhere. You have to work so hard the foam comes out of your mouth. You have to work even if you don't want to get anywhere. Just want to keep your wife and children in shoes and Sunday school clothes and whatever. You have to work hard. That's the condition, that the foam comes out of your mouth. But what's the result of this work? That then we go to the next consonant, ba. Ba stands for byartata. Byartata. Byartata means disappointment. That even after you work so hard all the time, driving yourself so that foam comes out of the mouth, in the end you find just disappointment. You're always disappointed. And then, pa, paya, fear. In material life, you're always in the blazing fire of fear because nobody knows what will happen next. I see, in spite of all of your security, that's what they call those things, right? Securities, non-negotiable securities. So these things are called securities. They have different names for this stuff, securities, but there's no security. And real estate, although it turns out to be very unreal in the end. Because nobody knows what's going to happen next. So because you don't know what will happen next, that in spite of all security, in spite of your walls around you, in spite of the effort that you've made, death comes through and with a little pin bores through your walls and there you go. So there's always bhaya, fear. You don't know what's going to happen next. You read the newspaper. The newspaper is a history. Somebody mentioned yesterday, I guess, Sadarucci, that the newspaper is very much a chronicle of the way people leave their bodies suddenly and unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. The late Ian Fleming, author of the James Bond series, did not like to travel on airplanes. Because he described an airplane as a comfortable living room that at any moment can change into a blazing inferno. So, actually, your comfortable living room can at any moment change into a blazing inferno. Not just an airplane. Because, you know, these people that we just read about, people up in some motel somewhere, or hotel where the jet airplane came skidding into the lobby and everybody was roasted to a crisp. They say that human beings have been burned to death. They look like charred turkeys, because people, when they're burning to death, they automatically draw their knees up and put their hands up like that, and then their limbs get burned off, so you just see these little stumps like that. And so that's all that's left is, you know, these little things lying around. That's what happens. So at any minute, at anything, any place can turn into a blazing inferno or whatever. And you can, you know, your whole life can be reduced to a little bit of char. Because the last one, mrityu, death. So that's material life, right? You work hard. You work so hard the foam comes out of your mouth. You're always disappointed. You're always in fear, and then one day comes and you die. That's the material condition. So when we attempt to nullify these different statuses of life as papa, papa, ma, you achieve apavarga, or liberation from the punishment of material existence. That's the apavarga. Dharmasya apavargasya, it says, huh? All occupational duties are meant for apavarga, for ultimate liberation. You should never perform your occupational engagements for material gain, because once you perform your duties for material gain, you're implicated in pavarga. You're implicated in the suffering of material existence, pavarga. And, is further stated, that one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational duty of Krishna consciousness should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Because that also, that gets you off of the path of apavarga. So that's what dharmasya apavargasya, all meant for the end of ultimate liberation, not for arthaya, for material gain, artha. That's the... So this is one of this fear that's used. So that's good. That's the use of jara. So people, when they begin to see that, jara is coming on, then they become afraid. they become fearful. Because these are the harbingers, the signs of old age. They're the harbingers of death. So this is the human condition, to rotate in material life and repeated birth and death. People are in illusion. Illusion means they see one thing as another. So although this material world is not a place for sense for happiness, because you can't get what you want here. People want to live fully. They want to live without restraint or restriction. They want happiness. People are looking all the time. That's all they're wanting, is some little happiness. But you don't get it. It's not available in the material world. And they're so unfortunate that even though their sense gratification makes them miserable, because you see that. You see the people who are more deeply, people get engrossed in sense gratification, the grumpier, the nastier, and the meaner they get. This is a fact. I've seen it. Because they're disappointed. Because it's never enough. It's never enough. There's always disappointment, and there's always fear, because it's of this nature that it lets you down as soon as you get it. It doesn't really satisfy you. You get bored with it quicker and quicker. Therefore, you're afraid, because it's what's going to happen next. What will I get next? Where will it come from? Whatever I have will be taken away. That in spite of all this, because what happens is you know instinctively what this material world is like. You know from reading history that there have been thousands and thousands of generations of human beings before you. Where are they? They're gone, vanished. Most of them not even leaving a trace. Every so often somebody will come and put up a stone or a marker or leave some refuse for the later ages to sift through and try to figure out who were these people and what were they doing. But even that, after a while, is washed away. So you know this is what's going to happen. So the more you engage in sense gratification, the more we become attached to the sense objects. You can't engage in sense gratification without becoming attached. There's a myth that's propagated in certain circles about spiritual life that allows you to enjoy sense gratification without becoming attached. This is on the other level, how people fool themselves that, for example, they're going to be able to take heroin on a regular basis without getting addicted. Sense gratification is itself addictive. It's of that nature that you, once you get it, you want to have more. The body, the condition of the body, the material body, is that it creates demands like that. So this idea that you're going to go in, grab some sense gratification and not get attached to it, that you can enjoy, but in a spirit of renunciation, this is not spiritual life. So the hard news, where Prabhupada's uncompromising line was, these things are incompatible. And when there's either pavarga or arpavarga, there's sense gratification or there's the spiritual life, there's liberation. And if sense gratification increases, your self-realization decreases. And if your self-realization increases, sense gratification goes down. So the best thing that we can do for our actual happiness and ultimate welfare is to become free from sense gratification. Well, you try to convince your mind of this. I may be convinced, because that's called intelligence. I've heard this from my spiritual master. Yes, I believe it. But then try to convince my mind. Because you're living with a junkie. Who's a liar, a cheat, thief, everything you can imagine. Do anything for sense gratification. So that's why there's a prayer to the mind. Who wrote that prayer? Oh, my mind, you are not a Vaishnava. Bhakti Siddhanta. Yeah. That's the condition like that. Because the mind is still so much thinking like this, so much trained, conditioned. The conditioned soul, that's what you're conditioned to. So very few people are willing to embark on this path. They're all deluded. Every year they're finding more and more ways to try to increase sense gratification until finally something happens. And the whole thing. So they go through these periods of more and more sense gratification, and there's the usual economic crash, social crash, biological crash, whatever. And they become bitter and disappointed and so on, because the crash is always there. Because they push nature. As long as there's live within the laws of Krishna, Ishvasyam nidam sarvam yatkincha jagatyam jagatina chaktina bunjita magadakasya siddhanam. You follow this law, that you take what you need, just that's necessary for your keep body and soul together for your maintenance, and don't take what doesn't belong to you, then everything will go on nicely. Everyone will be maintained. There won't be any crashes. There won't be any devastations. But as soon as you get greedy, and by that greed you transgress the laws of nature, then all hell breaks loose. In the history of human civilization, snivelization, in modern times, just the history of all hell repeatedly breaking loose, and people not learning. So the fact is that we see that these things do not alert people, that they are so deep into illusion that in spite of the obvious fact that material life is not a forum for sense gratification, nevertheless, people cannot give up on it. People cannot give up on it. And I've given that my prime example is the writer who saw the person in a cancer ward in the hospital who had a larynx taken out for cancer, the larynx from smoking cigarette, and this person was holding a cigarette up to the hole in the neck and inhaling like this. Ah, real satisfaction. The totally miserable condition of life, and still they're thinking there's some happiness in this way. Well, the answer that people have is, but it's all we've got. It's all we've got. And therefore, because there's no alternative, because this is it, if all we can do, this is their philosophy, that it's a void. There's a void behind and there's a void before. And somehow or other, between these two infinities of void, before I was born and after I was born, somehow or other, here I am. Inexplicably, a little spasm in the void. And so, what am I going to do? I just better try to make this the biggest and best spasm I can get. So, the manufacturers of a certain alcoholic beverage used to exhort us on television, you only come around once in this life, so you better grab for all the gusto you can get. Bet you everybody knows the brand name already. See how we've been conditioned? We've been taught like this. And it fits together. That this is it. This is all you can do. So this is ignorance. Because of want of any actual knowledge of who they are, what their purpose is, people are plunging into this abyss of sense gratification and suffering. And they are so determined to have some happiness that they'll still maintain this dogged effort in spite of so many failures. But if one knows, if there's some knowledge, if actually somebody is transmitting knowledge, spiritual knowledge, or just knowledge to people, why call it spiritual? It's just knowledge. It's not like some special category about who we are and what we're doing here and what our purpose is and why we have come and where we should go. If you're on the path of Krishna consciousness, Upavarga, then old age is very, very welcome. It's useful. Because although to another person who sees, you know, their hair beginning to fall out in the sink, every time they brush their hair, they notice the sink fills with this coating of hairs, and they think, oh no. And they think of the ultimate baldness of the skull in the grave, you know, that this is what's happening. I'm losing my virility, my potency. I'm going to be an old man, or the gray hairs coming out, and so on. And you know, jaw beginning, gravity beginning to have its effect, and so on. And your teeth get longer and longer. That's a long in the tooth, you know, an expression for old age, because, you know, your gums recede as you get. All these are signs of old age. So these start to, you know, go on. So this strikes terror in the heart. It's going to be harder to get attractive sexual partners and so on. And then they're worried, you know, the heart attack is coming. And then they start to get a little austere. And then they undergo their triple bypass coronary surgeries and their heart transplant. And all for sense, such heroics. The first heart transplant was done in South Africa. And, you know, here these guys doing prodigies of medical technology in order to get a transplant, a human heart, to somebody else. Christian Bernard was the surgeon's name. And I remember reading about it in the newspaper when it happened, because everybody was thinking, wow, you know, because everybody's mind, that's the thing, you know, as long as the heart keeps going, there's life, you know, and if the heart wears out, if you can stick a new one and keep on going, we've got it licked. That's the whole thing about the heart transplant. So when this fellow was a heart transplant, the big news was when he successfully enjoyed sexual intercourse once more, that you know, he shows that it was their ultimate success was there. He could do that. That means he could finally, you know, otherwise maybe it wasn't worth it. Not completely, but that showed, yes, it was a complete success. So I've forgotten, I lost my train of thought on that one. People will do anything to try to keep on going. So they try all these efforts, and it's just for the sense gratification. So they make it worse. They make it worse. Not better by all these difficulties. So they have no knowledge. So for them, the signs of old age are just a disaster, the ultimate disaster. For a devotee, it's encouragement. Immediately you can understand, here is the first warning that I have to accomplish my purpose. And if there's some fear, what should be the fear? That I will leave my body before being as Krishna conscious as I can possibly be. So we should not be afraid in the sense of the way the materialist, you know, anything may happen. We know what's going to happen. It's not that we have to die like cats or dogs. We know what death is for. We know what death is about. We know how to die. Socrates said that a philosopher is a person who knows how to die. Who knows anymore the art of dying? They don't. So this is our business. So we should be ready for this. We should be on the path of Upavarga. And we should understand that sense gratification in any form is our enemy. Not to make up different ways. Well, We shouldn't be like this in the mentality of here are the rules and regulations, and then how can I fit in sense gratification according to the rules and regulations? No, we should want to become Krishna conscious, and want to become Krishna conscious should be how much sense gratification should I get rid of? All of it. And if I'm in some position that allows me some concession for sense gratification, I should try to end that as soon as possible. Now, all these material attachments, they lead me into this pavarga, to horrible life. So sense gratification, this is the cause of all suffering. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, we've been so conditioned, material life, sense gratification is all happiness. But the truth of the matter is, the truth that people can't see is it's all suffering. Because of want of knowledge, they need to know what human life is for. We need to know about the alternative, because there's nothing other than sense gratification. That's all that the happiness that there is. And that's simply not true. And the best way to show people is to actually be situated on the spiritual platform where people can see that here I am, here are people who are not getting sense gratification, following the four regulative principles, and yet they're happy. They're happier than I am. Their moroseness has gone away. Their faces are bright. They carry on, no matter what the circumstances. They aren't defeated or downcast. Why is this? People will wonder how it is that people can be like that. That's the way they want to be. But they can't get it. Because as soon as you're tied into sense gratification, then you enter into a world of anxiety. So much anxiety is there. Include the anxiety of time. That's when you become subject to time and you become subject to death. Because all sense gratification, you're implicated in material nature. Sense gratification is what implicates us in material nature. And then in everything else. Time, death, old age, birth, disease, because those goes along with it. So, Prabhupada has said that death is an illusion. It is, because we're deathless. But still there's fear, I'm going to die. Why has this illusion come upon us? We've imposed it upon ourselves due to our desire to enjoy in this world. So all these attractions of Maya are fatal attractions. They're deadly. It's deadly. So we should have the knowledge and the wisdom to avoid these things. And if we actually do, and we become situated on the spiritual platform, then we can save other people also very easily from these attractions of sense gratification. And that's our process of Krishna consciousness, that it gives the higher taste. But one has to follow very diligently. You can't be an amateur about this, about Krishna consciousness. Whether you're a temple devotee or not a temple devotee, if you're on the apavarga path, you can't be an amateur. Amateur means part-time, a hobby. It has to be one's main concern, and one's whole life has to be centered around it. If we have other desires, they'll interfere with this one main thing. It's apavarga, freedom from these four things. So this diligence is required for the successful performance of Krishna consciousness. It's necessary. As long as we are, Prabhupada used that that example, we have to cook with fire. If we cook with smoke, if we chant Hare Krishna, but without following the process of chanting Hare Krishna. Well, it's easy to chant Hare Krishna, but if you want it to be effective, one has to follow the process. So that process is given. If we follow the process, then it works very, very quickly. One will cook with fire. Otherwise, it's like cooking with smoke. Your fuel is wet. Your process is mixed with sense gratification. It'll take a long time. And you get very frustrated. You stand by the pot and nothing happens, nothing happens, nothing happens. But meanwhile, your eyes are burning from all the smoke. How can I stand this anymore? I'm going to get out of here. But somebody else is, I mean, he's cooked his meal, eaten, gone back home. This is required. So in order to execute this, that's intelligence. And steadfast determination, dridha vrata, fixed vow. We have to serve Krishna in that way. And then the taste will be there. The taste for Krishna consciousness actually arises when we are chanting the holy name on the clearing platform. If we're chanting offensively, there'll be no taste. Just force yourself to do it. But as soon as we're trying to chant by avoiding the offenses diligently, working sincerely to chant by avoiding these offenses, then you can tangibly feel the connection with Krishna, and the higher taste will be there. And that higher taste is actually one's protection against sense gratification. Because upon experiencing a higher taste, you become fixed in consciousness. So that has to be there. So if we're not diligently trying to chant by avoiding the offenses, then we're forcing ourselves to chant Hare Krishna and to remain in the process. And usually such people are living on memories. They're living in the future and they're living in the past. They're living on memories. I remember one time what it was like to be... How many times have I heard this? Yeah, I know what it's like to be Krishna conscious. I was Krishna conscious once. I know what it's like. I've always wanted to get that back. But because now they're not trying to clear their offenses, they're not trying to get rid of sense gratification, because that's one offense, to maintain material desires, even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. So that because they're maintaining material desires, that's an offense. How can I, here I am sitting here, and I'm chanting the holy name of Krishna, and yet in the face of that, I'm maintaining material desires. That means I don't appreciate the holy name of Krishna at all. That I can maintain a material desire. But yet I've made so many accommodations. It's all right if I have a material desire. Everybody, you know, that happens. But to maintain them is another thing. So in one sense, it's very simple to come to the clearing stage of chanting. One just has to make the resolve to clear up the offenses. But people who are suffering under a long burden of offenses against the holy name, the fact is they can't constantly chant the name of the Lord. They chant for a few days, they try to get back in it, then they can't do it, then they come back and they try some more and they can't do it. They can't. Not until they change. Not until they clear up some of the offenses. If it gets very, very heavy, they won't be able to keep on. Well, if they're doing it, it's a hard, very, very hard struggle. It should not be so hard. So once one is resolved to rectify any offenses and is diligently trying to do that by seeing what they are, studying them, being very, very cautious and careful, then immediately there's a taste. There's Krishna's fully present in his name, and that begins to be apparent when there's chanting on the clearing platform. So that's the way to avoid death, to avoid pavarga, to avoid that, a row of five horrible things, parishrama, pena, and so on. Any questions? Yes. When will that day come when your desires are satiated? We're talking about sex desire, of course, and people say that they mean sex, really. That's the desire, okay? That's the big one. They mean sex. No one has become free from sex desire by engaging in sex life. What happens is it comes back stronger. You get maybe, you know, depending on how old you are or whatever, you get, you know, some respite. But it's very brief. It's very, very brief. You scratch an itch and then, like poison ivy, you know, no one has become rid of poison ivy by scratching it. It spreads it, rubs it in further. Then you get it on your hands, and it gets in your face, and then it breaks out all over. So the sex desire, when you indulge in it, it leads to more sex desire. And that leads to other desires come up. They all serve sex desire. If you have sex desire, then you have to have, ambition. Because sex desire, you know, it increases a false ego. So first thing I need is sex desire. I need to impress my sexual partner, if you're a man especially, with my position in the world. That's what turns women on. You see in, you know, the streets of New York City, you see these really attractive young girls, and they're going out with these old men that look like toads. And if the women aren't just sheer prostitutes, why, you wonder why these old men who look like toads are and these women, they're really attracted to these men. I'll tell you why, because they're powerful men. Because even though they're old and fat and bald and they look like toads, they control millions of dollars. And that's an aphrodisiac. I mean, really, and this is so you have to do that. If you're really successful, even though you look like a toad, you can still get. This is a fact. Right? So you have to do like that. You know, then so many other things are there. You have to maintain your prestige. You have to maintain your position. You have to impress women. Yeah. Then you get more and more implicated. It's horrible. So it just doesn't work that way. Where people have gotten this idea that. Well, then the idea is, yes, and then I'll find it out. I'll gratify my senses like crazy. And then I'll be really miserable, and I'll give it up. So what you're saying is, I want to suffer more. What you're saying is, I realize the result of sense gratification, but until I've experienced that total suffering, well, of course, you're just lying to yourself. You don't really want that suffering. Well, I don't know what kind of stupidity is that. Because a person won't watch somebody put their hand in fire and scream in pain as the flesh, you know, gets crisp. Can't they? Then they stick their own hand in the fire. You can learn. Of course, there are many people like that. We're talking about devotees here. They say, "Well, until all my desires are fully satisfied, and I get really fried, I won't be able to take up Krishna consciousness." So we just want to appeal to these people to save them some trouble. If they want to go through that trouble, well, who can stop them? And all you can pray is Krishna will make them suffer a lot really fast. Sometimes we see that happens. You don't get hardly any time at all to enjoy before the misery comes. But we don't have to wait. That's the whole process of Krishna consciousness. If people just try. But the trouble is that maintaining this attitude that, well, I really have to have time to gratify my desires, and thus maintaining an attachment to a material desire in this way, is an impediment to your actually get rid of it.